Welcome to Conversations with the Wise, insights and practices for difficult times. My name is James Barras, founder and teacher of the Awakening Joy course at awakeningjoy.info. If you're having trouble staying clear and positive in these crazy times, you're not alone. I'm asking some of today's most beloved wisdom teachers to share their insights and practices to help us retain clarity and calm in the midst of all the chaos and distraction in our world. For more information on this series and to see videos of these conversations, visit awakeningjoy.info and click on Conversations with the Wise. And now, here's our conversation. Enjoy. Hello to everyone listening to this call. This is one of the series of conversations that I'm doing that I'm calling Conversations with the Wise, Insights and Practices for Difficult Times. And I'm so happy that I have a chance to have a conversation with an old friend and very inspiring person named Bob Doppelt, who is really one of the most respected voices around sustainability, working with climate change and disruption, author of two really wonderful books. One is called From Me to We, and the other, Transformational Resilience, both of which talk about how we can bring as much consciousness to this crisis that's facing humanity. Bob, it's really great to have you here.
Well, it's my pleasure. Thank you for asking me.
And I'll just give a little bit more background, and you can clear up if I'm missing something. Bob was really one of the leading point people during Obama's administration to keep them on point with the severity of climate change and what needs to happen, and was he held a consortium or organized a consortium of 18 different environmental groups that kept the administration on point during those years. And since he's gone around to communities organizing a lot of other environmental groups and communities in how to work with the trauma that is a natural byproduct of climate disruption in places like the fires in Santa Rosa or floods in Houston or Puerto Rico, the trauma that comes from going through that is as much of a challenge and needs to be addressed, as well as the logistics and physiological recovery. And that's what his book Transformational Resilience is about. And I've attended a number of workshops with him, going to various communities and getting the local people giving them tools to share with their community. So, and anything else that that's important for people to know about your work?
No, I think that's a pretty good summary. I really tried to help sort of grow a moral movement around climate change, and as part of that, the need to help people address what I call the psychosocial spiritual aspects of climate change, which includes the traumas and stresses generated by the disasters, the wildfires, the floods, the big storms that climate change brings, but also the toxic stresses, as we call them, those persistent, overwhelming stresses that so many people are experiencing today, all of which climate change aggravates. So climate change is a direct source of trauma and stress and a stress multiplier, and it causes a tremendous amount of sense of hopelessness and helplessness and a loss of spirit that's what we've been really trying to focus on.
Mm-hmm. It's such important work. And I'll mention one more thing also to give people a sense of what you offer. Bob and I go back about 30 years sitting mindfulness retreats and doing practice in deepening one's consciousness. And I asked Bob to come to Spirit Rock a number of years ago when I was helping organize a retreat for Vipassana teachers, mindfulness teachers, and when I said to him, Bob, it's so great that your consciousness world, your meditation practice, and your work in sustainability have come together. And I remember him saying to me that, the consciousness holds the key to all of this, and the principles that we're teaching at Spirit Rock are really, really so integral to the solution. And I said, Bob, I want you to come and tell that to all the teachers. And he did. And it was a very inspiring meeting that gave birth to a number of wonderful movements and initiatives within our meditation community. So thanks so much for doing that and being a catalyst in that way.
Well, it's always been my honor to be involved with this kind of work. And with you, James, we once tried to figure out how many years ago it was. I think it was between over 30 years. So it's been wonderful to work with you and know you.
Back at you. Same here. So I've been having these conversations and asking some of the wisest people I know, which is why I want to include you in this series. These days are so chaotic and uncertain and filled with so much fear and divisiveness and insecurity on top of everything that climate disruption is bringing. And I want to know particularly your work in the current atmosphere. What is your wisest perspective that helps you to hold that all without going over into overwhelm and negative reactions, and keeps you sane and positive and motivated in these times?
Well, it's a very good question. I can't imagine. I don't remember a time in my life that has felt so distressing and stressful. And I certainly am affected by it, just as anyone else is, with lots of ups and downs and saying to myself or saying out loud, oh my God, did you know about this? But I try to first think back as to why we are all here. And we're all here, in my mind, in the way I look at the world, to work out these issues. So first I try to say, well, this is natural, that these kinds of distressing situations emerge. Most of the time they're at a very much smaller scale than they seem to be today. But then I try to remember that everything is impermanent, and that this shall not last. Things will change. Sometimes it can get much worse before it changes, but it will change. excuse me. And that I think hanging on to the sense of permanence is what often causes me to get distressed. So, and I just say, no, this will also change. I can relax some with that and let it go. And then I use a number of skills that I've learned throughout my life, some from you many, many years ago, of meditation. But I also try to get exercise quite a bit. I play basketball with a group of guys at about 7:30 in the morning at the local YMCA that we've been playing for about 30 years, three days a week. So I go down there and I do that. We used to be good. Now we're sort of old and slow. And every now and then the ball happens to go in the hoop. And
still having sort of, fun. Still
that's
having
right.
fun. Though. Yeah.
Still having fun. And the scoring a basket is sort of a sidebar now. And try to eat well. And spend time with and just in a loving relationship with my wife, and we nurture each other. So I make sure we, and with friends too, we focus on that, those skills, those experiences, and keep in mind that that's why we're here, and this, nothing lasts forever. Everything is impermanent. And that allows me to resurface in a healthy way most of the time.
So remembering impermanence, that whatever we're going through now is part of a bigger process, and nourishing yourself as best you can as you're doing all of this very intense, important work.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I think I should have added just what you said, that to me, the best way to stay grounded, to regulate myself, is to continue to engage in good work. And so I stay focused on the work we do, and that also helps me feel like I'm contributing, which also helps me regulate myself.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Well, and so let me ask you, and I know that in your recent book, you this is one of the things that you've focused on, how to regulate oneself and how to work with the grief and the intensity and transform it into a resilient response. And I wonder if you could share for people listening just some practices that you find helpful that you personally use to work with your internal response when you get activated. You probably do still from time to time, or find yourself in outrage or frustration or despair or ill will. And what do you do? And maybe what would you suggest to others? And if you want to give people an experience, you could do some simple guided practice now if you feel like it, but just what comes to mind?
Well, first of all of those feelings and reactions that you described, I experience them all. I'm just a human, and humans experience all that. But again, I try to notice what's happening within me, although often it takes a moment, or sometimes an hour, or sometimes a half day to notice what's going on. But I think having that kind of desire to be aware of what's going on within me really helps. And I feel good about myself because I know I will try to do that, even though it's often not very quick. It's not instant. It depends on the intensity of the experience and the severity of it, et cetera. But one of the skills, well, first of all, using meditation to try to, even if I just get 30 seconds sitting on the couch, just to go inside and follow my breath, often I can immediately feel my body relax. And because, I meditated for so long, I know I don't have to worry about being centered with my feet on the ground, sitting straight up. I can do that most of the time in many situations, not always, but that helps. But other skills, and if people listening are interested, I can, run people through a few skills, but there are body-based skills that I've just learned in the last 5 to 6 years working with a number of different people that are core steering committee members of the organization I now coordinate. We call it the International Transformational Resilience Coalition, ITRC for short. You can look it up on the web, we have about now over 300 mental health, resiliency building, trauma treatment, mindfulness, climate change, faith, and other professionals and leaders working to build resilience for the traumas and stresses of climate change. And one of those people that on our steering committee is a woman named Elaine Miller-Karras, who runs the Trauma Resource Institute, has really perfected a set of body-based skills, which merely means trying to just sense what's happening in your body physically when you are distressed. And what it does is when you do that, you are activating the parasympathetic nervous system of the body, which is the body's brake system. Because when I am dysregulated, when I am agitated, when I am angry, what's happened is my sympathetic nervous system has been activated, which is the body's gas pedal. So I try to use these body-based systems in addition to mindfulness and meditation and the physical exercise and other things I do. So one of which is called tracking. And what it involves is just trying to get in a relaxed, comfortable position. You don't have to close your eyes to do this. You can leave this open or you can close your eyes and start with just a couple of gentle breaths just to relax yourself a little bit or become more centered. And then just very gently scan your body from your toes up through your legs, up through your back and your arms, all the way to your forehead, trying to just notice the physical sensations that exist without trying to change anything.
I'm doing this with you as you're saying, so I'm just getting into it myself.
Okay.
So taking a few deeper breaths and then just feeling the sensations.
Scan your body for sensations, and they might feel, you might sense pleasant sensations, a pleasant tingling or warmth in certain areas. You might feel unpleasant sensations. You might become aware of tension or pain or too much heat. And there might be areas of your body that you feel nothing at all. They're neutral. And that's perfectly natural also. So just scan and see if you identify, just can notice any of those sensations. And as you do that, what often happens to all of us is that our attention gets focused on areas of our body that feel unpleasant, whether it's pain, tension, or heat, discomfort in some way. That's perfectly natural. But if that is happening, when that happens, just sort of deliberately and gently place your attention on areas of your body that feel pleasant or neutral. And just notice what happens within you without trying to change anything. And if you're trying to deliberately focus your attention on areas of your body that feel pleasant or neutral, but your attention still keeps going back to the unpleasant sensations, which is very common, might just want to gently touch each part of your body, each sensation, and go back and forth between them. Just gently touch the pleasant and unpleasant. Spend a second there, a moment there. Then go back and just touch the unpleasant sensation, the area of that, and then shift your attention back to the pleasant sensations and just gently go back and forth for a few seconds.
Touch it with awareness.
That's right. Just become aware of it without trying to change anything. And just as you do that, just notice, just become aware of what happened in your body as a whole. Just sort of notice your breathing, your breath patterns, maybe your heartbeat, anything else. Just notice what's happening. And then when you're ready, James, you can just take a couple of slow, deep breaths and gently come back to the room and to our conversation.
Great. That was great. Just as I've seen many times, just a moment of connection and awareness and putting attention on something that's tangible and physical takes the mind off of whatever spin cycle or emotional reaction that might have gotten activated. Great.
That's exactly right. We call these presencing skills, and just what you described, James, is exactly what happens, that often we stay distressed and agitated because we're thinking about something, about how horrible things can be in the future or what somebody did to me, you know, just recently or in the past. This kind of process brings you right back to the present moment. You're sensing the sensations in your body in the present time. So you're getting that flexibility, that gap between the thoughts, if you will, and that allows your system to calm itself. Is that what happened? Can you share that?
Yeah. The miracle of mindfulness, as Thich Nhat Hanh refers to it. Just there's refuge right here in the present moment. So wonderful. Yes.
Just one other step. So, I, for those of you listening in, this is a skill tracking that tracking your sensations that you can use anytime. I often do it. Even I do a lot of facilitation. I try to do that 2 minutes or 2 seconds before I start facilitating. Sometimes even when I'm talking, I try to pay attention to the physical sensations in my body. So it's a very, very powerful, self-administered skill that can be used at any moment.
Mm-hmm. Yes. It's similar, something that I have done for a long time and often suggest when people are getting swept up in their thoughts to either turn your attention to your hands, wherever they're touching, or if you're standing, just your feet on the ground, or your body sitting in a chair, wherever it's sitting, as a simple grounding connection that turns your attention to the present, as another very simple thing that you can do wherever you are. Just staying grounded, getting into your body, can help you get out of your head. And I also I my particular area that for years I've used is just the contact of my lips touching as my breath is there, but just that simple contact and feeling the tingling in the lips has always been a very reconnecting focus. So I guess people can find whatever particular area that that can be their home base in those moments.
Yeah, I think that's right. And the only addition I would make to that is often because our brain and body connections are set up to protect ourselves from a threat, mm-hmm. we are often attracted to unpleasant sensations that keep us, when we think about them, keep us dysregulated or distressed. So just to remember, if that happens, to try to find pleasant areas or neutral areas in our body to place your attention, because that does shift things in your body. Mm.
Wonderful. That's really great. Anything else while we're on the practice end of things that comes to mind to share? I'm sure you have plenty, but I might as well mine you for for your secrets in trauma work.
Well, there's a whole set of different kinds of presencing skills, but there's also what we call purposing skills. And I think they're just as important when you have ongoing distress and tension and adversity that you're dealing with. But let me back up and just say one other kind of presencing skill I mentioned before mm-hmm. is staying connected with your social support network. We have a little tool we developed called Circles of Support, where we ask people, we have people sort of identify who are their true allies, the people that give them unconditional support or practical assistance when they need it, but also to identify what their skills are to deal with adversity, what their resources are, their internal resources and external resources. An internal resource, for example, is just bringing to mind images of or remembrances of times where you felt completely at ease and calm and happy and peaceful. And just bring that to mind and nourish it in your mind a bit. That's an internal resource. And then there's mm-hmm. external resources. So staying in touch with and connected with your social system and your skills and resources is critical. And what I do often, and I think what most of us do, is when we're distressed, we do not think about reaching out to those people and those resources. We forget it for a while. So the more we can deliberately say, wait a second, yeah, I'm really upset now. I'm going to go and call up so-and-so and, talk to her on the phone or have coffee with somebody or go play basketball at the Y with my friends or whatever, or use these skills. So that's critical also. But then the purposing skills, and what I mean by that is deciding how you want to live your life in the middle of distressing situations is really critical, because what often happens, I find myself attracted to this sometimes too, is that we end up doing things that or thinking things that we're very unhappy about later because we were triggered and we felt like lashing out or yelling at somebody, or we end up harming ourselves in some way. We go home, we drink too much alcohol, or we use drugs or whatever to deal with the distress. Mm-hmm. So when we adopt different purposing skills, which really means, for example, clarifying what are the two or three core values you want to live your life by in the middle of distress, and if you do that, you'll feel like you're living with dignity and with hope. And just really being clear about that and trying to go, but wait a second, is this the value that I want to live my life by? Will I feel good about myself if I don't do this, in this situation or not? I think that kind of purposing and engagement with others then in activities that provides that sense of purpose is also, especially in today's day and age where we have so much political, economic, social, and ecological distress occurring, purposing is equally important to presencing.
Mm-hmm. This is something that is stressed also in the teachings that we share at Spirit Rock. One of the principles I've always been inspired by is what's called clear comprehension of purpose, where you have gotten clear on your vision for yourself, what kind of a life you want to create. Sampajanya, it's called, and once you have that clarity, then that's the direction that you're intending to face, and everything falls into place as you keep on remembering and reconnecting and recommitting to it.
Absolutely, yeah. Mm. Well said.
Wonderful. Well, I'm wondering a couple of other things. Thank you so much for sharing some of those skills, and these are the things that you write about in your book, Transformational Resilience, right? And that you go around to different communities and teach people how to share these skills with others in their communities. This is a big part of the work that you do. Isn't that right?
Yes, that is the work that I do, and it's also the work that the ITRC that I mentioned, the International Transformational Resilience Coalition, is trying to do, not just in the U.S., but around the world. We've got projects in Africa now and in Europe, and a number of people in Australia and New Zealand also beginning to work on these to really what we call build a global movement for transformational resilience. But there's not any new skills per se, new perspectives or principles that we're sharing. We're just trying to put them into a framework that can be shared widely with in age and demographically appropriate ways.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. So, and might as well give the website, your ITRC website?
Well, that's a good question. Let me pull it up. And I think if you just Google International Transformational Resilience Coalition, you will get it.
Okay.
But I think, yeah, you might Google it. It's part of, I run a nonprofit that's affiliated with Willamette University, and we coordinate the ITRC out of that. So you could also Google the Resource Innovation Group, excuse me, and then look up the ITRC on that. But I think you probably can get it just by Googling the International Transformation Resilience Coalition.
Great. Okay. Want to make sure people have that, that reference. Here you are working primarily focusing on the trauma that comes with climate change and disruption, which you are an expert on, an authority on, and it ups the ante as far as anxiety when you're so immersed in that topic. And I've always felt, and just like you're talking about having a purpose and having a larger vision, that having some kind of inspiring vision helps in doing that work. And I wonder if you could share with people your most positive vision of what the future could hold, given the fact that that the effects of climate change are already upon us. What could you say to people that say, "Oh, well, what's the point? Is there anything we can do?" What would be your most positive vision that you could share with people?
Good question. Well, first of all, it's a little background. In three lifetimes ago, I was trained in systems dynamics and systems thinking, and I used to teach this at the university. In fact, this is the first year I've not taught in about 15 years. What you learn when you understand how complex systems function is that systems push back hardest when they're on the verge of change. And they push back hardest to maintain the status quo. And if from that perspective, that's how I look at what's happening with Donald Trump and a number of other things. The systems are clearly about the change, both because of the changed demographics of the U.S., the more diversity, more ethnic diversity, and other kinds of diversities, but other kinds of economic, social changes. And so, he represents the desire to go backwards, to push back, and keep us where we're at. But it is in those most difficult situations that the system pushes back, and then it tends to change, and the transformation then happens. And so, to me, I think it is very possible, if we have the right perspective and take the right approach, that the climate crisis can be used as a moment in history of just profound transformation. And we see it in the background, sometimes the foreground, occurring already with the growth of renewable energy and all sorts of other things. I think it could be the start of a new economic model, a new way of relating to people, an entire shift in mindset about what's important in life and how we humans can and must live on the earth and sustain it. So I'm actually still fairly optimistic, even though the times seem incredibly grim, because not really even behind the scenes, but just a little bit below the chaos of that Trump likes to induce, and all this pushback, there is so much going on that I think we might be near a tipping point where things go in a very different direction and in a very constructive, transformational direction. So I'm optimistic. That doesn't mean it will go that way, but because we really have to get our mindset clear and what we're trying to do, rather than retreating just into fear, because when we adopt those fear-based reactions, our minds and bodies lash out at others or lash out at ourselves. If we, in fact, you see this as an opportunity for transformation, I think we can make something happen.
I feel the same way that I love the notion that Andrew Harvey shares of that we're going through an analogy to the dark night of the soul that St. John of the Cross writes about in one's personal spiritual crisis, that we're going through the dark night of the species, where you go through the most frightening places, and it has the potential to lead to a whole new level of awakening and understanding. So Anna, and personally, I've never been as involved and committed to make a difference. I haven't been this patriotic in 50 years, just saying, hey, I really do love what the ideals of America are, and the ideals of connection and caring, and it seems like there's a whole movement in that direction.
Yeah, I would completely agree. One thing I can add about that is one of the most important things in times of distress is to try to reframe the way we're thinking. Excuse me. And one way to reframe it is, rather than continuing to think and say things to ourselves like, what's wrong with this situation, what could happen, et cetera, is to ask, what can I learn? What can we learn from it? And trying to use a situation as a learning opportunity catalyzes what in psychology is called post-traumatic growth. But I think it's at the core of the Four Noble Truths and all the spiritual perspectives that we offer, that we can actually learn and grow and increase our well-being with the right perspectives. But it takes that suffering to do it. And that's what we're doing now. We're suffering tremendously. If we understand the cause of that suffering and what's going on, we ask what we can learn from it. And we can actually increase not only our own well-being, but the well-being of many, many others and the planet, while we do what's necessary to deal with the ongoing impacts of climate change and restructure our social systems, our economy, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. Lovely. Well, that is pretty much the point of the Buddha starting off with his teaching. There's suffering in life, because he said the more you come to terms with suffering, then you can come to the end of suffering, and that suffering often is what wakes us up from our complacency. So
exactly. Yep.
This is just what you are. What you're sharing and teaching. And I also want to mention how impressed I am with your first book, From Me to We, which talks about five principles that we teach here at Spirit Rock, or that can be found in Buddhist philosophy, not only in Buddhist philosophy, but they're right there, that different principles that you put in a non-jargony, non-spiritual language, but that those shifts of consciousness are what's needed to make a change in our society that we're talking about. You do such a beautiful job in translating those spiritual principles into something accessible that anyone can understand and relate to, with some scientific basis for that underlies that change. Just finally, I would just anything else you'd like to communicate, and particularly if there's anything that occurs to you about what next steps that people might consider taking for themselves to either get involved or express the caring, as you were saying, the purposing end of things. Suppose somebody says, well, I just don't know where to start. I'd like to do something, but I've got no idea. It's so overwhelming. What do you say to somebody like that?
Well, first of all, just know that most of us feel overwhelmed right now. So if that's how you feel, you're not alone by any means. And it's, how could you not be in this kind of situation, in this kind of condition in your society where you live? So we want to first help everyone understand that what they're experiencing is very normal. But then I think what we know about the science of hope, as well as the practicalities of it, actually researchers have dived into this issue in great depth, is that hope emerges sort of through a combination of three key factors. One is you have a vision develop a vision of some place they want to arrive at, or a condition they want to create that's different than they are today. The second is people develop some sense of a path forward, the first couple of steps towards that vision or that new condition, and how they're going to begin to get to move in that direction, not a whole strategy, but just a sense of it. And third, that they join with others, even if it's one other person, to move forward on that path, to take those first steps with a sense of what they're going to do once they hit some obstacles, because they will hit obstacles. So plan for that ahead of time. What I guess I would recommend is, you know, try to clarify what can you do where you would feel good about yourself by helping other people, or helping the natural environment, or helping society. And find another person. It might be somebody in your family. It might be a friend. Talk about that, and see if you can just join with somebody else or a larger group to take some small steps towards that. See how you feel after you've taken those steps, and decide if you want to take a few more, and just become engaged in some activity where you feel good about yourself by helping others or the environment. And my guess is you're going to, most people will find that it's a very powerful experience. But again, prepare for what you're going to do when you hit an obstacle. And because that also can be a very great learning experience that can help you increase your capacity to do more.
So once you put yourself in motion, even taking smaller steps, that good feeling that that arises makes you motivated to want to do more, and just to keep that that track of absorbing your anxiety through action and engagement.
That's exactly right. You know, again, the research has shown that what you could call self-transcendence. If you really want to help yourself and feel better about yourself, the best thing you can do is actually reach out and help others or do something for society to make the world a better place, for nature. What the science shows, for those who are interested, is what actually happens is your body releases oxytocin into your blood system, which makes you more sympathetic, more empathetic. And therefore, you want to do a little more. And that you do a little more, and more oxytocin is released into your blood system, your bloodstream, and you do even more. So you get a virtuous cycle going. And it's not about moralism. It's about an extended sense of self-interest. The more you help others or do good things, actually, the more you're helping yourself. And it's a psychobiological response. And almost as a sidebar, it also helps the world.
Everyone wins. It's very much like the positive psychology movement that Martin Seligman started, where they identified that the greatest source of happiness is identifying what gifts you have to offer and contributing in a meaningful way. That's a much greater source than what you can get from life or from others. That it's in the giving that that you come alive. There's the scientific evidence to back that up.
Right. Yeah, that's exactly right. That this is a neurobiological response, and that humans have been using forever. So it also can give you some insight into what's gone off the rails in our society now, with Donald Trump being the epitome of quite the opposite. Doing things only for his own benefit, and things get worse and worse. For him and a lot of others. So I do think there's a great opportunity here to use this distressing times that we're in as a transformational catalyst to learn and to grow and actually increase well-being. And who knows what's going to happen, but I think there's a very good chance we're actually going to be able to spur a very different era in human history.
Very encouraging to hear you say those words. Bob, what a pleasure to be with you, and inspiring as well. And thank you so much for all the work that you do. And I so value our friendship, and just want to support you spreading your message and your inspiration. Thank you for all your work and for being here with us today.
Well, it's my pleasure, and I feel the very same way, James. So thank you for having me here, and thank you for being with me and being together on these issues.
Okay, well, let's keep on doing it.
Okay, sounds good. Thank you all. Take care.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Conversations with the Wise, Insights and Practices for Difficult Times. For more information on this series and to see the video of this and other conversations, please visit awakeningjoy.info and follow the links. We'd love to hear from you, so please follow us on Facebook and YouTube and let us know what you think. And please like and share the videos. Till next time, this is James Barras wishing you true well-being and a caring, loving connection with the world.